With us today is Carl, and Carl, you have been ministering in church and overseas work for a while. How long have you been doing that?
Well, it's almost 45 years.
In this 45 years of ministry, one of the areas that's very close to your heart is rural ministry.
Yeah.
How did you get interested in rural ministry?
Well, for one, I grew up in a rural community, and for nearly 20 years, I served as pastor in churches in rural communities and small towns. I've walked in their shoes. I've felt the stresses they feel. Rural pastors have always had a special place in my heart. And when I did my doctoral research, I did it on the unique stresses of rural ministry and the effects of those stresses on the marriage and the family of the pastor. So I've read a lot on the subject as well, needless to say. And I've also lived cross-culturally for 10 years and have ministered in a lot of different countries and different cultures. And I find that a large segment of the world's population lives in small towns and rural areas. And a lot of Christian workers serving around the world are doing so in those less populated areas.
How prevalent, then, is rural ministry?
More than one would think. You know, a young Christian worker heading out on his new first assignment might anticipate that he's going to serve in a church of 500 people in the city, the potential of growing to 5,000 in the next 2 years. But the reality is, his first assignment will likely not be there. It'll be in a small town or a rural area. His salary is going to be meager. He probably will have to take on a second job. There was a recent study done in America, and 45% of ministers serving in rural churches also held secular jobs. And of those bivocational pastors, 60% had full-time secular employment. Mm-hmm. So they were actually doing two full-time jobs, the church and their secular work. And I think in some other countries, the percentage would probably be even higher. Often this new worker, whatever we want to call him, finds that the rural culture is very different from the city where he or she likely grew up.
Why do you think we don't hear very much about rural ministry?
I see the rural pastors particularly as being the forgotten servants mm-hmm. in ministry, kind of like the flyover country, you know, the space in between the cities that people don't really go there, they just fly over it. Rural churches, small churches, are generally not valued in the larger ministry culture due to their typically small size and, of course, then their nominal economic effect. But the reality is that most pastors will never serve in a church of more than 100 members. And a large majority of churches across the world have less than 100 in attendance on any given Sunday. So rural or small church ministry is going to be a part of their experience, whether they expect it or not.
What do you mean by the term rural?
Usually we think in terms of farms, no towns, long distances between houses. But I include small towns in the definition of rural. Although small towns are different from strictly rural areas, they usually serve as service centers for the surrounding farms and ranches. So there's a lot of social and business interaction, and therefore a lot of similar patterns of thinking. So I include the small towns in that. Rural and small town culture is embedded deeply. And understanding that culture is essential to understanding the people in those communities. Every community has its own culture, but there are common patterns as to how these communities approach economics, education, things like that. And understanding these patterns is essential before attempting to minister or certainly before attempting to implement change. Rural communities are often defined by their city counterparts as what's lacking. You know, there's no shopping malls, no healthcare facilities, no job opportunities, no, you know. And that produces a negative image in the minds of those who can't imagine life without shopping malls and healthcare facilities, and so on. But there are a lot of positive things about rural life as well. Rural people have a strong sense of place. Physical space is important. They identify themselves with a a certain piece of land, and that land has become their life. And often that land was passed down through the generations, and so it not only was meaningful to them, but to their father and grandfather and so on. Rural people tend to stay in their communities. It's not that they never move away, they do. But for many, that move out of the community is a last resort. Mm-hmm. It's often forced on them by economic necessity, and generally they don't move to solve problems. People in the city sometimes will move just to solve a problem, but rural people tend to stay and they'll figure out how to cope with those problems where they are. Once a person is accepted as a part of the rural community, others in that community are willing to put up with each other's quirkiness. And we're all quirky to some degree. We realize, or rural people realize, that the damage that conflicts can cause. And so they'll suppress the conflict for the sake of harmony. They'll accept other people. They'll put up with their whatever, accept them as they are. Whereas a city person more likely is going to break the relationship mm-hmm. over trivial matters, because the need for that relationship with his neighbor is not as crucial in the city. There are a lot more possibilities for other relationships. The outpouring of support in time of need in a small community can really be inspiring. Not because rural people are more caring than their city neighbors, but because they have more opportunities to know their neighbors and to become aware of the trials and the needs that are going on. The kind of connection and community that you find in a rural setting is something that people everywhere are seeking and want. Mm-hmm. Rural people may provide a sense of community and belonging, a sense of safety and predictability, a feeling of being known and noticed. But those are some of the very things that other people dislike about the rural setting, because personal freedom is sacrificed for a sense of belonging. Being known is paid for with currency of privacy. Gossip is a big part of small town and rural life. Newcomers are often viewed with suspicion, especially if that person's perceived values are different from the local ones. A rural pastor's lifestyle is therefore always on display because he's a newcomer, usually. And if he makes a cultural blunder, rural people are not likely to forget very easily. In recent decades, there's a new rural culture emerging, it's not a rural culture, it's a new culture in rural areas. A lot of city people who moved out to the non-farm areas, and they've created communities, maybe a subdivision in what was once a cornfield or something like that. People prefer the rural or the small town living. They want the quietness and the rural values, but they also want the city as a part of it as well. And with advanced information technology, a lot of people, professional people, can do that. They can move from the city to the small towns, to the farms, as long as there's a phone or a cable or satellite connection. They've got their computer and their internet and their home office. They don't have to be in the city. And as a result, the boundaries between the urban and the rural cultures are not as distinct as they were, say, a few decades ago. In fact, there's a new word, rurban, that has been coined to refer to the new culture that's emerging. People who have moved to the rural setting, but they still hold on to their city and urban values and mindsets. They're not familiar with the rural culture, and sometimes they get rather frustrated and they find adjustment difficult because they're living in the rural culture. And also, a lot of rural communities have become bedroom communities for the major cities, and that, of course, would hardly fit in a rural culture as well.
What is it like to minister then in this rural context?
Well, ministry in a rural area differs significantly from that in the city. And that difference creates unique stresses on the pastors and their families in areas like isolation or even exclusion, not just isolation, time pressures, pressure to produce results like their city counterparts, unique stresses there. And unless one has grown up in a rural area, that rural culture can be as different and as shocking as that of a foreign country. Like in any other setting, ministry has to address the unique culture of the local community. Rural folk are very attuned to the rhythms of the seasons. They follow the same patterns year after year. There's hunting season, there's haying, there's planting, there's harvesting, there's the annual rodeo, the county fair, there's events like that even. And there's so much a part of the community life that if the pastor doesn't get involved in those things in some way, he can commit social suicide. He can be an outsider forever. And if he ignores those patterns in his scheduling, he may find that he's the only person that comes to an event because he scheduled it on the day of one of these things that go on. Effective pastors in rural community can't be spectators. They have to be participants in the communities they serve. They got to learn the values, the strengths, the peculiarities of the community. And they also have to learn the language of the community. They got to know what type of crop people are talking about, what kind of machinery or animal they're talking about. I've known a lot of people who make some humorous mistakes in these areas. Humorous is okay, but disastrous is hard to live down. Mm-hmm. The language of rural communities includes the history of the community. For example, an event may be related to the frost of 1963. Well, that was the year that a lot of fruit farmers had absolutely no income. In fact, their entire orchard froze out. The trees died. Or a particular farm might be referred to as the Johnson Place, even though the Johnsons sold out and moved into town 20 years ago. Or the Jones Mill might be a concrete slab because a tornado destroyed the buildings 15 years ago, but it still identifies a particular corner of crossroads as the Johnson Corner or Jones Corner. Effective ministry requires we learn that community history so you can speak the local language intelligently. Now, a leader in a small rural church has to learn the history of the church as well as the community, because every church has its own culture. Each church is unique, and you can't do the same thing in every church. Mm-hmm. Change is difficult in rural churches because yesterday is usually more important than tomorrow. Rural churches tend to be interested in maintenance, not transformation. That doesn't mean that they can't change or don't want to change, but a person has to lead change very carefully. And rural people will not be pushed, but they can be led by example. As one author put it, a pastor needs to live one's way into a new way of thinking rather than to think one's way into a new way of living. Rural churches tend to be small, and people typically think of small in a negative rather than a positive way. Even Roger's Thesaurus gives a disproportionate amount of negatively charged words like undersized, scarcity, insignificant, minimum, trifle, stunted, puny, weak, mean, petty, limited, lesser, unimportant, trivial, inconsequential, on and on and on. Now, if small carries that negative connotation in normal speech, it's no wonder that small church is perceived negatively. The phrase small church invariably produces mental images like limited human resources, a handful of petty people, bickering, lack of privacy, money worries, limited programs, clergy turnover, and a whole lot of other things. In a society that holds to the philosophy that bigger is better, a small church is frequently devalued. Small church pastors are seldom asked to speak or even lead a seminar at a convention or at church gatherings. And the unspoken attitude seems to be that small churches and small church pastors have little to offer the Christian community. That could not be farther from the truth. I think of it this way. The Sunday morning attendance of many rural churches is equal to about 10 or even 25% of the population of the area. I don't know any city church that has that percentage. Most of them minister to maybe 1 or 2% of the people in their area, even though their numbers look more impressive. Mm-hmm. In the small church, the pastor deals with the same people over and over and over, and many have the same needs day after day, year after year, and that can get wearing. Some people voice the same complaints over and over and rehash the same old disputes from years ago. I think that phrase, familiarity breeds contempt, probably became an adage in a rural community. But having to deal with the same people over and over again can be frustrating, but it also has its positive side. Funerals are more personal because the pastor is truly mourning with the family. He's lost a friend, too. And weddings are truly joyous occasions because the pastor knows very personally at least one of the couple, if not both of the people who are getting married. And so the rural pastor can truly rejoice in seeing the small steps of spiritual growth in people because he knows these people. He's with them. And the pastor of a large city church may never see these things in his people. In the rural setting, weddings and funerals aren't just another task of ministry that you delegate to some staff member. They're opportunities to bring blessing to your friends.
How are rural churches different from city churches in the way they are organized?
Out of necessity, rural churches tend to be organized simply. There just are not sufficient personnel for a lot of committees and organizations. Sunday schools have traditionally been a major part of rural church programs. In fact, in some cases, when worship services are not held every week, the Sunday school still meets and serves as a substitute service. Some rural churches met as Sunday schools. My home church that I grew up in was a Sunday school before it ever became a church. And then it finally got organized into a church. Other subgroups like women's organizations and choirs and youth groups and men's groups, they're kind of inconsistent because, again, insufficient number of people, either to participate in or to lead them. So one organizational chart doesn't fit all churches. Decisions and policy making in small rural churches differs vastly from that in a city church. People know each other, and they're talking together and arguing together sometimes as friends, and they come to decisions far differently than their city counterparts. Modes of communication are different. The need for planning and scheduling is different. And often the systems and the processes that we learned in seminary do not work in the small church. In the midst of a declining rural community, the rural church is often like a lone flower standing after a violent hailstorm. The rural church seems to have an unusual resilience. The lives of rural people are more integrated with each other than is typical in a city setting. Rural people tend to work and play and converse and worship together. And that integration may provide an explanation for the resilience. Rural life is lived more in community than city life is, and rural churches function more like families. Rural people know something about economics and social difficulties. They live with crisis and decline every day, and they've learned to survive. And that survival carries over into the church as well.
What are some of the stresses, then, of rural ministry?
Well, ministry as a vocation, regardless of where it is a challenging one. And stress is a normal part of life. Gary Smalley defines stress as that gap between what you expect to happen and what actually happens. And although rural pastors suffer many of the same stressors as their city colleagues, it might be argued that those serving in the rural areas, especially those who grew up in the city, are vulnerable to even greater stresses. We expect one thing to happen, but reality is quite different. Some of these stresses may not directly affect the marriage relationship, but they all add to the stress of adjustment to rural life. In my research, I looked at six different stresses: financial stress, time stress, pressure for results, isolation, penetrating a closed rural system, and a lack of preparation for rural ministry.
Okay, this sounds interesting. Let's break each one down. The first one, then, is financial stress in the rural ministry.
Financial stress is huge in rural ministry. Poverty is a significant reality for many people in rural areas and small towns. In many rural regions, the rate of poverty is higher than that of the inner city. We usually think of the inner city as being the poverty area. As an example, in one year in America recently, individual incomes rose nationwide by 5%. During that same year, farmers' incomes decreased by 23.8%.
Wow.
The primary problem for many small town and rural churches, therefore, is financial. The churches just don't have the resources to pay a full-time salary. A limited church budget means a limited salary for the pastor. And so increasingly, rural pastors and or their spouses are forced to find other work. And that adds another stress, balancing work, ministry, and family. A lot of pastors in small churches and rural churches are keeping the church afloat themselves financially. 70% of rural pastors' spouses work outside the home so they can afford to stay in ministry. And the pastor himself is often bivocational as well. Because they feel so alone in bearing this financial burden, over time there's a real temptation to become bitter and resentful. Often, the lack of adequate salary also results in short-term pastorates. That hampers effective ministry, too. The pastor and his family would love to stay. They love the people. They like the ministry, but they just simply cannot afford to stay in the church. And so they're forced to find a larger church or some other vocation. Fuller Seminary did a study recently and found that 70% of pastors indicated that their compensation contributed to conflict in the marriage. 70%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've looked at the financial stress. What do you mean by stress of time?
Well, ministry is more than a job. Ministry is a way of life. A doctor can claim a full schedule and delay his appointments 2 months out. A lawyer can refuse to take on a client. A carpenter and electrician can turn down a project. The customer has to find another tradesman. But in rural ministry, the pastor has to take what comes. People don't consult the church calendar before they get sick or die or fall into sin. Mm-hmm. In the city church, this load is spread around more easily due to the presence of professional staff or lay leaders. But in a rural church, the pastor usually has to bear the entire load himself. Pastors live in a world that never stops. The average work week for a pastor is between 55 and 75 hours per week. Many are bivocational or even multivocational, and most of their spouses work outside the home, so time is a major stressor for clergy families. How do I have time to do everything, still be a husband, still be a father, still minister to my family, still have energy to minister to the people in church? All of those things. And the stress arises and even increases as they try to find that balance between work and family.
Okay, so the question then is, can't we train up leaders to pick up some of the load?
Well, the Apostle Paul wrote about pastors and teachers preparing God's people for works of service, in Ephesians 4:12. But the challenge is to break with that commonly held attitude that the church ministry is confined to the role of pastor. A lot of people have that attitude. And one of the great challenges for the tent-making pastor is the development of these lay leaders. It takes time to recruit. It takes time to bring somebody alongside and train him to lead in certain areas of the work. And often that time is just not available. It's not there. Ministry in the rural setting demands a high level of internal control. There are no supervisors or managers to answer to. Nobody's looking over your shoulder. The district superintendent might be miles away, and you can go either way. You can get lazy and do nothing, but most pastors I've found go the other way. There's a heightened sense of responsibility, and these internal control mechanisms easily become more demanding and exacting than the external controls. And so it's an easy step then to perfectionism and workaholism as the pastor struggles to live up to his own unrealistic self-imposed expectations. Work in ministry can easily become a way of legitimizing ourselves or showing our self-worth.
You started mentioning the stress of producing results. Can you develop this a little bit more?
Yeah. The church has, in many areas, adopted from the business community a philosophy of production and results. If a church is not growing numerically and financially, something is assumed to be wrong. And usually the finger gets pointed at the pastor. Whether those expectations come from the denominational or mission leaders or the Christian community as a whole, in small rural churches where numerical results are hard to come by, that places an enormous amount of stress on the pastor. His identity, his sense of self-worth can easily be bound up in results, or the lack thereof. Numerical growth in rural areas is usually relatively small. So the temptation for pastors is to go where the action is, cities, mm-hmm. metropolitan areas. A study of 341 clergy from 36 different denominations showed that unrealistic expectations are a major factor in a pastor's burnout. Rural ministry can be an emotional roller coaster. You get a phone call from a young couple who've been visiting, and they say they want to become members. That can put you on cloud nine. Within minutes, another phone call from the church treasurer. He's threatening to resign and leave the church over the new budget, and that can bring on a temporary depression. One family joining or leaving doesn't affect pastors in large city churches nearly as much. But in a small rural church, it could easily represent 10 or 15 or even 20% of your congregation, one family.
One of the areas you've talked also a little bit about in the rural situation is the stress of isolation. What does this mean?
Isolation plagues most rural pastors and their families. They're forced to not have friends. They're forced to not be connected with their community in a lot of different ways. There are few people that seem to have unlimited tolerance for being alone. They don't mind being alone, but most of us wish for easier access to shopping, medical facilities, entertainment, whatever, or just friendships with our colleagues. A lot of rural churches are in small villages, many kilometers from a city of any size where you can find those things, and so you're out there all alone. And every pastor and his spouse needs the support that comes from relationships within the community social networks. But commonly, pastors and their families are placed on a pedestal, which makes it difficult to form those normal relationships. That isolation that results from the fishbowl effect of living in the public eye, it can be very stressful, especially on the pastor's family. He maybe can handle it, but often it really affects the family. In a rural community, everybody seems to know everybody else's business, so that stress is even more pronounced. Lewis McBurney illustrated the problem when, in one of his books, he said, "Where do pastors go for help? When you know most of the pastors and the counselors in the community, it can be humbling and risky to tell one of these friends that you're having trouble. And if people in the pew don't help, often they have the attitude that anyone who would need a counselor would not be fit to be in the ministry." So you have that sense of isolation. Now, satellite television, cell phones, internet have removed some of that isolation that was once characteristic of rural communities, but not all of it. Although it wasn't based specifically on rural pastors, there was one study that revealed that one in six clergy shows signs of serious distress from their high levels of isolation and loneliness. Pastors without a strong sense of well-being and personal adjustment will have a hard time guiding other people in their spiritual development. One writer suggested that rather than try to fit into the normal rural culture, the pastor should embrace the role of being an outsider and become a confidential person with whom people can share their secrets and fears and so on. Since everyone knows everything about everybody else, they need somebody who will keep their stuff private. And rather than try to hard to fit in, just embrace that role as an outsider. When I read that, my first thought was, this guy's never lived in a rural community. Mm-hmm. It may work in some cultures, but in others, it doesn't work at all. You're out there all alone.
How is isolation related to the stress of trying to then penetrate a very closed rural system?
Many rural congregations are very closed system of long-established relationships. They have ready-made support system, and it never occurs to them that the pastor doesn't have those relationships. Rural people are often not known as individuals as much as a part of a clan. A guy can be married, you know, 40, 50 years old with children and still be referred to as Bill Johnson's boy because he's part of the Bill Johnson family. Or the guy that married the Peterson girl. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, he was from the outside or he would have a name. Mm-hmm. The insiders have names. Outsiders don't. They're identified by the insider, the Peterson girl. The pastor seldom is able to break into those already established groups, at least not until the trust and respect has been earned. And during that time, he needs the friendship of his spouse, and that's all there is to sustain him. And that's why he feels the pain of isolation so acutely. Those who call a particular community home are often very wary of outsiders who don't understand the local ways of doing things. And anyone who moves into a community can be considered an outsider. Mm-hmm. And so the best thing a pastor can do in a rural area, especially if he's new moving in, is recognize that community acceptance is going to be slow. And the best thing he could do is avoid creating threats to the homeostasis of the rural system. A willingness to be flexible and adaptive is a necessary survival for rural ministry. The unfortunate thing is some groups move their workers every 3 to 5 years. In rural areas and small towns, that's not enough time to build the relationships necessary for effective ministry. Mm. Learning the history of a church and a community can speed that process of relationship building, but the pastor may always be considered an outsider. He may have learned the history of the church and the community, but he wasn't a participant. His family did not survive the terrible flood or the horrible tornado like other people in the church. Peter Wagner, one of the experts on church growth, states that it takes 3 to 6 years for a pastor to earn the confidence of his people to the point where they will trust him as leader. Now, if that's true, one can plan on it taking a lot longer than that in a rural church because of their inherent suspicion of outsiders.
Okay, Carl, as we're looking at rural ministries here, we've looked at the financial stresses, the time, the pressure of isolation, the pressure for results, penetrating a closed system. So now the question boils down to, are the pastors that are coming even prepared? Have the seminaries and Bible schools done anything to prepare them for the stresses?
Unfortunately, very few seminaries prepare their graduates to serve in a rural culture. And as a result, a lot of people are sent out with neither the background nor the training to prepare them for the unique challenges of rural ministry. 60% of all seminaries have no courses specifically related to rural or small town ministry. Yet more than half of all seminary graduates will serve in a small town or rural church in their first pastorate. And a majority of seminarians come from urban or suburban backgrounds, so many who are entering the rural churches do so completely unprepared for the profound culture shock that awaits them. Much of seminary education is biased toward the suburban or the urban context, and that's understandable because that's the cities and the suburbs are where most people live. That's where the growing churches are likely to be. That's where new churches are likely to be planted and so on. But it doesn't prepare a pastor for rural ministry. And, of course, denominational leaders tend to focus on the large or the growing churches. That's where the exciting things are going on. But in doing so, they inadvertently overlook the small town or the rural church. Roy Oswald is a consultant for the Alban Institute, and he suggests that 80% of seminarians come from large churches, most of which are in the cities. Mm-hmm. Yet 80% of all American churches are small, many of which are in small towns and rural areas. Now, that's a cross-cultural barrier as tough as any foreign mission field. He contends that the difference between seminary religion and parish religion is greater than the difference between denominations. Mm. In other words, he believes it's easier to grow up Baptist and switch to Methodist than to move from seminary to the rural church pastorate. Yeah. In almost all rural churches, the pastor is directly in charge of the congregation. Mm-hmm. Often that occurs immediately following graduation from seminary. And if he's had no experience leading people, no experience leading anything, the seminary didn't prepare him for that huge cross-cultural experience. And the shock will almost always be overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The rural pastors have to be able to apply the message of the Bible to the needs of the people they minister to. And that requires a thorough understanding of the culture of those people. Rural pastors should be the best trained of all pastors, I believe. They have more situations with which to deal on their own, with fewer resources to call upon, than do any of their city counterparts. The rural pastor not only has to run the copy machine, he's got to mow the lawn. He's also got to do almost everything else in the church. And he's got to compete with the larger congregation in the city, because sometimes people are within driving distance into the city, or slick television productions that come on at right at church time on Sunday morning. And it's unfortunate. And when a young pastor from the city crashes into that rural culture, it can take a high toll, both on him and the congregation, because disillusionment and feelings of inadequacy and even open conflict are very common. Now, some educators are beginning to notice the problem and are changing their course offerings to better prepare these pastors for what lies ahead. I have to give some seminaries credit for that. I read of one Texas A&M University, which is not a seminary by any means, and the Southern Baptist Convention have teamed up to develop a program that trains rural ministers of all denominations on how to examine their communities and how to adjust to the culture shock. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great. Mm-hmm. Now, the organizers and the facilitators admit it's no panacea for all the problems, but it does help pastors to look at the challenges in a healthy way. Other people are usually the major source of frustration for a minister, yet people are what ministry is all about. Whenever we work with people, there's going to be misunderstandings and miscommunications. Social workers and counselors and teachers typically are trained to handle those conflict situations. Difficult personalities and communication problems and the other things that we face, pastoral training, unfortunately, doesn't. It tends to emphasize more just the theological study and preaching. I believe it should include people skills, too.
Okay, Carl, we've looked at the financial stress, time stress, the pressure for results, isolation, penetration of a closed rural system, the lack of preparation for the ministry. Let's bring this really right home. And how does this affect the marriage and the family?
Most people find that their greatest problems with stress involve relationships, relationships with other people. Any setting that puts people in regular contact with one another has significant potential for stress. And marriage is especially vulnerable because the closer the relationship, the more likelihood there is of stress and conflict. You add to that the stresses from the outside, the likeliness of relational difficulties is significantly increased. So it's going to affect. And a pastor's family system is impacted both by internal and external stressors. The external, the cultural, the work-related stressors can negatively affect the marriage and family life. A recent survey of pastors showed that 94% felt the pressure to have the ideal family, and 80% believe that ministry has had a negative effect on their family. Now, some of this may be the perception of the pastor or their family, but the expectation that the pastor's family will be an example is often clearly expressed. Some years ago, Leadership Magazine reported a survey. They did, I think it was 748 pastors on family matters. It wasn't exclusively about rural pastors, but it's an indicator of some of the problems that rural pastors face. 55% said they were very satisfied with their marriage, but 81% indicated they had insufficient time together, and 64% indicated they had communication difficulties. Almost half said their spouses wished their sexual intimacy were more frequent. They and their spouses, I'm sorry. and only 10% were very satisfied with their current level. And the pastor's busy schedule and their spouse's busy schedule were the top two reasons for intimacy as not being as frequent as they wished. An interesting observation from that survey also is that only 1/4 of these pastoral couples had received marital counseling. Mm. A lot of them were unsatisfied, but only 1/4 had sought counseling. Now, that indicates a reluctance to seek help, even though marriage satisfaction is not what they wish it should be. Researchers have found that almost 1 in 3 pastors who leave the ministry have had family difficulties as part of the reason they left the ministry. And clergy rank 3rd in the percentages among professionals who get divorced. Wow. Most often cited area of marital discord was inadequate time with the spouse, lack of affection, financial problems, not enough time with children, and sexual problems. Marriage conflicts might be the result of job stress that's transferred to the home, but stress is all around. The family can be a place of relief from the stresses of ministry. It can be a sanctuary for re-energizing, but it can also be a contributing factor to the stress buildup. Clergy spouses, and they're usually female, often suffer quietly. Call-in counseling ministries receive an increasing number of calls from pastors' wives who want help, but they want to remain anonymous. They have nobody to talk to about their frustrations. The pastor gets some sense of satisfaction from the ministry, even in difficult times, but his wife can feel isolated and trapped. Many report being severely depressed. They feel like they're not able to express themselves. It's like they're sitting on the sidelines, they're watching their spouse get beat up emotionally. They see him come home, flop into a chair, stare into space, and they ask themselves, is it worth it? Will it ever change? Are we doing any good? Mm-hmm. At a recent conference of caregivers that I was at, a colleague reported that the 2 most common issues prompting calls to his hotline were finances and isolation. Focus on the Family also reported that the top 2 issues on their pastor care line were the negative impact of ministry on the family and the negative impact of church conflict on the family. Both organizations said that roughly 1/2 the calls are from pastors' wives who had nobody else to call. In a study of religious professionals, Protestant clergy had the highest overall work-related stress, and they were next to the lowest in personal resources to cope with the occupational strain. Southern Baptist did a study of their senior pastors. They examined the factors that contributed to sexual misconduct with members in the church. They found that high levels of stress and sexual misconduct were strongly associated. Granted, no amount of stress excuses sexual misconduct, but the research shows that stress can very adversely affect the marriage relationship.
We've been looking at the stresses of rural ministry and looking at financial, time, the pressure for results, isolation, the penetration of a very closed rural system, the lack of preparation that many of the rural pastors have. We've talked about some of the negative effects on the family and the ministry. But now, how can a pastor protect his family and the marriage?
One word, balance. Mm-hmm. But the balancing act itself can be stressful too. We work long hours, irregular hours. We place our own well-being second to others, to the people we serve. We get involved deeply in other people's lives. There's highs and lows, and often there's not a whole lot of energy left for working on that balance. Our work and our family life are very intertwined. There's hardly anything that a pastor does that doesn't affect or have an impact on his family. His family is constantly on display. There's expectations and all of those sorts of things. And he's got to be available 24/7. At least he thinks he does. And he's got to find a way to effectively minister to his family and to his congregation. There's always more work to do than time allows. His family may or may not be understanding in that. It's his job to help them to understand. Above all, his marriage and his family must become a priority. Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. There's always more to do. There's always people to see. There's always a sermon to write or whatever. But I keep coming back to the fact that even Jesus didn't heal everybody. There were people who needed healing that he didn't. There were people who were waiting in line to be fed or to be healed or whatever. And he said, guys, let's get in the boat and let's go out in the lake. Mm-hmm. He went away. And there are times when, as a pastor, we have to do that. Yeah, there's a need. There's somebody that's crying for help, but they were crying last week, the same tune. They'll be crying next week, the same tune. You can take time out today for your family or for your wife. Just because there's a need doesn't mean that I have to meet it. Now, it makes me feel good if I do. I feel, you know, a sense of accomplishment, and that's a dangerous place to be because I get my affirmation then from my work and my family suffers, and we really have to watch that. Balance implies to some a 50-50 deal, mm-hmm. but I don't think balance is a 50-50 deal. I think every situation is different. Sometimes it may be a 75-25 deal. And that's something that every couple has to work out on their own related to their particular ministry. Researchers have also found that social support or having a friend who is an encouragement greatly reduces the stress and the strain. So pastors can take a lot of stress at work if they have the support of their spouse and a good friend. So cultivate those relationships, mm-hmm. relationships at home and relationships with a friend. And with communication the way it is nowadays, that friend doesn't have to be in the same town. I mean, on the internet, you can talk with a webcam, you can see them, they can be on the other side of the world, mm-hmm. and you can still have that relationship. It's not perfect, but it's better than sitting there alone. So work on those relationships with friendships and with your spouse. You know, I don't have all the answers. I wish I did. There were a lot of things I did wrong as a rural pastor. And every couple has to work out a plan that is going to work out, that will work for them. I can't say, here's a plan that you should do, but here's an idea. Find a plan that works for you.
You've been talking about rural ministries and the stresses, the strains, also the joys of ministering in a rural community. I'm overseas. I'm an expatriate worker. How can I, as an expatriate worker who's maybe called to a foreign land, encourage that rural pastor? What do I need to think about, and how can I encourage that pastor and family?
I'm assuming that you're living in close proximity to this person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same city, same village.
Same village, same area. Every pastor needs two support persons, his wife, or in some cases, if the pastor is a woman, her husband. But the spouse is the key, and also a friend. Mm-hmm. If you're in the same village, the same area, you can be a friend to the pastor or the pastor's spouse. I think that would be one of the best ways that you could. You don't have to, you know, do everything with them, but just be there as a sounding board, hearing, listening, without criticism, without judgment. Just at times you may judge, at times you may speak into their life and say, wait a minute, you know, I see something that's not right here. But generally, just being a sounding board and a friend, they need some place to unload.
In your series, you talked about balance and finding that family balance and ministry balance. Often we're in unique positions where we are in the congregation of these rural communities and these rural churches. How can we come alongside the pastor by helping the congregation to learn some of these balances and allowing the pastor to have that time off?
I think we can speak up, for one thing. When there is a discussion or even a request from the pastor for some time, somebody else in the congregation speaks negatively about it, I think that would be the time to speak up and say, our pastor is giving 150%. He needs this time. And if he doesn't get this time, we may be without a pastor. I think there is a place to stand up and speak up, even against our friends who are in the congregation.
The other thing that I know that we're facing in many of these situations is the cultural stresses. I know of situations where pastors have gone to bed at 11 o'clock at night, and of course, the bus from the big city arrives at 11 o'clock at night, and someone's friend or someone's brother, sister, daughter, cousin, and from another place, and they're expected to put these people up, and there's that cultural and social expectations. What do we do in situations like that? How do we address when it's so cultural?
Yeah, that's difficult, because you don't want to make a mistake, a cultural mistake, that will be next to impossible to overcome. If you refuse hospitality, for example, people may not trust you, or they may not listen to you, all of those things. My best recommendation in that would be, if you're called upon to minister at those odd hours, take some time other times of the day. There's nobody that says, and the Bible doesn't say certainly, that your work has to be between 6 in the morning and 6 at night or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or your time off has to be at certain times. It's balance again.
Yeah.
If you've spent all evening or half the night with somebody, don't feel guilty if you sleep in the morning. Mm. Or take an extra hour or two after breakfast just to relax and chat with your wife and that kind of thing.
Earlier you said crises and problems and deaths never happen at convenient times between 9 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock at night. Just as a last thought, what would you say to the rural pastor that's listening to us now?
I guess if I could somehow communicate, be encouraged. I think a rural pastor is often forgotten, works hard, works alone, and nobody notices. Just be encouraged that God notices. Yeah, maybe he doesn't say much right now, but one day he will. And I guess that's what we have to hold on to, is God understands, God knows, and he's the one who, in the end, makes things right.
Thank you very much, Carl, for sharing your thesis with us, but also for sharing your heart and for encouraging those rural pastors who are in their place of calling and are doing what the Lord's asked them to do.
Thank you.